Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. This is the post-election show where we devote the whole show to the election returns. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Mike Bradner of Alaska Legislative Digest, and from Juneau, Rebecca Braun of the Alaska Budget Report. Let's start with the ballot propositions and coastal zone management proposition number two. The initiative was born in Juneau, so let's go to Juneau and to hear from Rebecca Braun. Rebecca, this wasn't even close. What happened?
Well, to be honest, I think the oil industry and everyone else who contributed could have saved a heck of a lot of money. That this initiative would have gone down with no effort at all. I think if you just take the everyday Alaskan and said, hey, what's your vote on creating a new government agency devoted to planning and, you know, other sort of arcane activities, people are just going to say, no, thank you. And that the initiative could really never get past that. The initiative backers couldn't get around that.
Rebecca, one of the things that surprised me is in House District 40, which is essentially the North Slope from Kotzebue to Barter Island, only two precincts in Barrow voted for this initiative, and many of the initiative sponsors said it was for people like that who lived in those kind of places.
Well, I think that the initiative sponsors and backers really overreached, and I think that this actually happened sort of several times. Before the program actually died in the legislature, its backers, primarily Senator Hoffman and, you know, Senator Olson, wanted to expand the program to give local communities more say, and that's kind of where it died. They didn't want to compromise. And I think the initiative backers also overreached by expanding the program, and it just made people nervous to have this big, complicated law going on the books. So okay. Even people who might have been for it in theory got nervous about it.
And the it here being giving local people more say over their destiny in coastal zone management through a very complicated structure, or complicated structures, it seems. Paul, your assessment of the election in that respect?
I think it started out closer than it ended, and I think the effort by the anti-ballot measure 2 forces was pretty darn good. It's pretty inclusive. We wound up with four newspaper endorsements of this thing, including from the Juneau Empire, which I thought was odd that they would be against ballot measure 2.
I mean, endorsements
of
the no.
Exactly, endorsing the no.
Yeah, it's a little odd there too, because their readers voted for it.
It's right there. It's very strange. It was a very courageous move on their part, I guess. But all in all, I think it started out closer, and it slowly, as people caught on to what it was, started to lag.
Mike Bradner, what do people who advocate and want the CZM do now?
Well, I think they become more moderate in their demands. In the current initiative, they went far beyond the powers that existed before Governor Murkowski centralized them on the state level. And the message is, you got to go back to something that's more acceptable. And I think what happened is the initiative sort of ran wild among the makers, which often happens. You're dealing with all these different coastal entities, and each one wants to add something, and you get carried away. And I think Rebecca's right. I mean, just somebody looking at that initiative on the ballot and its length was enough to say no. But I think there's going to be some compromise, because also local governments can, you know, as we found out in the case of Pebble, using the local government framework in lieu of CZM can weigh in a lot against these projects. So there's going to have to be some balance here.
Okay, Mike, let's stick with you on initiative proposition number one, the property tax initiative. This went down also, although it seems to have been much, much closer. What did this proposal contain, and why did it fail?
Well, I'm surprised it didn't pass. I mean, anytime you say to the public, well, it's maybe going to lessen your taxes or give you exemption, why wouldn't they
it raised
for
it? Allowed local
That's
governments
right.
to raise the exemption.
It increased the allowable exemption, and not all communities offer it, from 20,000 potentially to 150,000 with the approval of the communities involved. Now, basically, it's a move that's of interest to high-value communities like the pipeline communities, because it's a tax shift. And I really
Valdez, Fairbanks.
Right, and those were the ones that had it before. They're the ones who sort of initiated this. And in the legislature, I think it's bad public policy. It's been there for years, but never moved more than one committee. I sort of wonder if it wasn't the super voter turnout that of people who are, you know, fairly knowledgeable and they vote consistently, who looked at it and some, you know, voted no.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Rebecca, changes are coming to the Alaska State Senate. We don't know how many changes, but it may be that Republican leaders who are opposed to the Democratic-Republican coalition are going to get their way. Two Republican incumbents lost. Tell us about the coalition, the opposition, and the outcome Tuesday.
Well, I've really suspected that the last legislature would be the last one for the coalition. I don't know that it's for sure, but I think it's more likely than not that there'll be a Republican-led legislature. They, of course, lost two members, Senator Wagner and Senator Menard, neither of whom was a leader in the coalition. They weren't sort of the glue, so that doesn't necessarily sound the death knell, but certainly the numbers don't look good for the coalition. They're going to lose, you know, most likely a Democrat because of redistricting. But that said, the coalition always was very personality-based. You know, all politics really are local and very personality-driven. And I think that, depending who ends up being elected and who gets along with who and who maybe doesn't get along, perhaps some kind of coalition can survive. The leaders of this coalition in the Republican side have really been Senator Stevens and Senator Stedman, and if they can put something together, then maybe they can keep it going. But
I was struck by during running when we had many candidates on the show, including many opponents of the coalition, that the Republican mantra seemed to be of the establishment mantra that the Republicans in the coalition were more or less victimized or led around by the nose by the Democrats. Was that true?
Well, I really don't think that it's true. I certainly can see why some people might think that's true. I think that in the coalition from the beginning, they said the extreme agenda on both sides is going to kind of fall off. And I think that happened. We didn't see a lot of sort of bills. On the one hand, you know, nobody's trying to legalize marijuana on the left, and on the right, they weren't trying to outlaw abortion. You know, they sort of dropped those things. And personally, I think that the bulk of Alaskans, they're sort of unaffiliated, they're not super partisan, and maybe for the bulk of the people, this was kind of satisfying and worked for them. Of course, for, you know, the oil industry, it certainly did not work for them. They didn't get through, at least yet, the oil tax. The coalition really blocked that. But some of the strongest opponents to that were Republicans, like Senator Stedman and Senator Stevens. And I don't think that they were being led by the nose.
Okay. Paul Jenkins, what happened in Anchorage?
Well, it's kind of an interesting new district kind of show this time around. You've got Betty Davis picked up part of Eagle River, and now she's going,
Are you in that district now?
Yes, I think I am in that district, yeah. And she's edging Harry Crawford at this point. Whoever comes out on top of that will go against Anna Fairclough, who I guess is just biding her time and collecting money. I think the one most of us were watching was the Bob Bell, Liz Vasquez race. Bell took it fairly handily. He'll be facing Hollis French. Hollis French is a member of the coalition.
He's an incumbent running in the
district. He's an incumbent Democrat running, and he's in the coalition. He was a mainstay in the coalition, so there's a lot of Republicans would like to see him knocked off. Lisa McGuire, who got caught in both sides of the coalition. Yes, I love the coalition. No, I don't like the coalition. She's managed now to fend off Jeff Landfield, so she's and fairly handily. So I think she's safe for a while.
Okay, Mike. Tell us about the one of the major races in Fairbanks. This involved former Senator Ralph Seekins against former State Commissioner of Labor Click Bishop. And this was the highest, or I believe there was more money spent in this race than any other race in the primary. What happened?
Well, they both raised over $100,000, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the total for both races hit $250,000, which has got to be the highest ever in a primary. And Labor backed Click Bishop, and they have a particular dislike of Senator Seekins. They've crossed swords for years. And Bishop was a very energetic campaigner. And he was out there, and he covered the district, and I think he probably, he mitigated the more conservative communities down the highway because he looked like one of them, and he wasn't a three-piece suit guy. So I think Senator Seekins just relied on media, and that didn't cut it. And it is a surprise because you had a Republican turnout, and you would think they would have leaned towards Seekins, who seems like the establishment in Fairbanks and has served before. And but it's a pretty startling event that he not only beat Seekins, but he beat him handily, with the exception of a few precincts. And so he's an unknown factor as to where he lies in this whole Republican organization that's going to maybe form.
Tell us about the other Fairbanks Senate races. Incumbent Joe Thomas in the new district running against Republican incumbent Coghill, and also Joe Pascavan, who's running against former legislator Mr. Kelly.
Well, you could see the effect of redistricting in the race between Thomas and Coghill, and they're both well-liked, absolute gentlemen, and I think people ought to be sort of frustrated that somehow they ended up in the same district. But certainly Coghill has the advantage, but Thomas is making a race of it. He's raising money, and we'll have to see when all the votes come out, but certainly it leans towards Coghill. In town, Pete Kelly pulled considerably more votes than Joe Pasvin, but again, this is that unusual year where we have a very low turnout, and it's super voters, and super voters who are Republicans, so I would call that race sort of even. And but it's you could lose both senators in Fairbanks, or you could win one.
Did it surprise you that Tom Wagner wasn't able to take even the precinct and a bid for re-election?
It
or
was.
Did his district change too much?
Yeah, and I don't know quite the reason for that. It was a little surprising to me, but given the reconstruction of the district, and including the lower half of the Kenai, which is fishing related, I think it had an effect. But I don't know the vintage of his candidate and how he ran against it, but we may have a Republican end of the coalition, or we may not. It may be another coalition, but that doesn't mean that things change necessarily for the oil bill. I mean, that doesn't mean the governor's oil bill or the industry's oil bill.
Well, it would seem that they would have to have more than 11 votes because they can't count on Stedman and Stevens, and they need more than 12, and it's very difficult, as you know, to organize with 11. For the Democrats, coming back to them just briefly, who are in the Senate candidates, many of them were badly outpaced, as were Coghill and Pascavan and Thomas and Pascavan and Fairbanks. What advice do you give to candidates who come up short in a primary election like this?
Well, part of that has to be offset by the low turnout and the greater frequency of Republicans going to the polls. They're super voters, and they always have a much bigger turnout. Also, of course, which is real, the effects of redistricting, which a lot of those districts were loaded with Republicans. But I think they have to come out and make a race of it. They have to get their face in the screen. They have to carry the debate into the open and hope most people will help them. I don't think you're going to get there by sort of hunkering down, writing it out, and just running with your media. Now, whether that will happen, I don't know. But I think they have a chance of good chance of surviving if they make a fight of it.
Okay, let's go back to Rebecca Braun and Juno. Rebecca, is the anti-coalition agitation that we heard so much about and saw on our television sets so often really a rail belt phenomenon, or has it gotten any traction in Southeast Alaska?
I think politics in Southeast are quite different, and there isn't really an anti-coalition sense, certainly not in Juneau, where, of course, we have a Democratic senator, Senator Egan. But Senator Stedman from Sitka has been a big leader in the coalition, and I would guess that most of Southeast feels they've benefited from that. He's certainly brought home a lot of capital for Southeast Alaska. And in Southeast, I don't think people are big on reducing taxes for the oil industry. We see more the benefit of those dollars than any costs associated with the high tax rates here in Southeast.
And what could you read in the tea leaves of the primary of Al Kukesh and Bert Stedman facing off as incumbents in a redrawn district that they're both in now?
Well, you know, I think that Stedman probably has a broader base and a broader appeal, although they certainly have very different experiences, sort of different groups of supporters. I would probably throw my bet Stedman's way if I had to bet on it.
Okay, and Dennis Egan did not have to run again. He is the only, or this time, he's the only senator that didn't. Is this from living clean, or was he just lucky? How did that happen? Do you know?
I actually don't know how it happened, but he gets a lot of luck because he also got appointed to that seat in the first place. If you'll remember, he was kind of the last man standing with that whole feud between outgoing Governor Sarah Palin. But when Senator Kim Elton left to go work for President Obama, not to bring up ancient history, but Egan's gotten lucky a few times.
And finally, Click Bishop, who won the Fairbanks nomination, or in that spread-out district that includes parts of Fairbanks, over Ralph Seekins, was he a well-known figure in Juneau, a visible figure, or less so as Commissioner of Labor?
I would not say he was terribly well-known. You know, I, of course, work in the Capitol, so I've seen him and met him and spoken to him, but I don't think most people really have. He was based primarily in Fairbanks and move between Fairbanks and Anchorage more than Juneau. He's sort of a real man of the people, though. From talking to him, my conversations with him, he's got his old mine that he likes to go work by hand himself. So I was surprised, getting back to the Seekins race, how handily he beat Seekins. But thinking back to it, I think Fairbanks voters kind of picked a guy who seemed like a man of the people rather than the car salesman.
And poor Ralph Seekins at this point, he's been beat up so much for being a car salesman. I think I should say that having known his reputation over the years, it's one of those things you can't win on. I did know people bought cars from him that said, you know, this is the best car I ever owned. I'm glad I bought it from him and it worked fine and the service was good. And then there'd be other people who would say, listen, I bought a Cal car from Ralph Singh. It's the worst car I ever owned. I'd never do anything like that again. There does seem to be a message in here for him, though, Rebecca. He's lost twice in succession now in seeking the Senate.
Yeah, and if I could just briefly remind people, in 2005, when Governor Murkowski was trying to push through, really working hard to push through a gas line, and he kind of went too far in the eyes of the public, giving too much away to the oil industry. And all that really gave rise to Sarah Palin, the coalition, sort of a big populist move that we're now seeing it shift back the other way. But going back to 2005, Seekins, as senator, he was chair of judiciary, and he was really carrying Murkowski's water on that. And so I don't know how much people in Fairbanks remember that, but he was pushing bills that a lot of people found very extreme that would limit judicial review, and basically, essentially, he was at least cast as somebody pushing legislation that would really limit Alaskans' ability to fight the oil industry.
Okay, Mike, I see you writing some notes on Ralph Seekins. You want to tell us where in your
notes? I think Rebecca hit it on the head. It's a real reminder. And there was, Seekins did that sort of crossways with Fairbanks constituencies in backing the governor on a lot of the pipeline stuff, and some of it which was a little unusual. So I mean, he's still carrying that burden.
Okay, let's turn to the House races. Mike, in going through the election returns, it looks like the Democrats at this point are confined to downtown Anchorage, downtown Fairbanks, parts of Southeast, and the Bush. And they don't have much of a opportunity in the suburbs and exurbs, especially a place like the Mat-Su Valley. Your perspective?
Well, I think that's because Democrats don't run people like Click Bishop, you know, that look like and resemble or sound like the people who in the districts that they're representing. Maybe, you know, a little bit too much of a liberal mantra, or in Southeast there's a certain style. Until that sort of changes and they recruit in those areas, I think they're going to come up on the short end, particularly in the House. There are some House members, I think, in trouble. Fairbanks, there's some troublesome races going on with
incumbents, you mean?
Yes, David Pruse and Scott Kawasaki. And I think the fooler in Fairbanks, perhaps, is Alan Deck and David Gutenberg.
What did you make of the returns?
Well, they sort of designed that district to reach in and pull Gutenberg into the bush and call it an Alaska Native district. And yet the voters on that end of the district are much more super voters. And so it, in a way, I think the response I had from Gutenberg, he says, this isn't bad for me, but it's disappointing for a lot of the Native communities if you win this from the Fairbanks end. And I think Alan Deck moved out of another District 36 now into Nenana, sort of to be in that race. And of course, he's got an airplane. He flies. He's flying the lower end of the river right now. But that's going to be a close race. And frankly, as a Republican, he should have done better.
Okay. Let's go back to Rebecca quickly. The report from Southeast and any sense of District 34, the Bill Thomas. The incumbent looks like he might be having some trouble.
Well, it's hard to say. I suppose you might be referring to numbers. Thomas got 937 votes in the primary. Of course, he was uncontested, so it was really, people had no particular reason to mark the box by his name. And Jonathan Christ Tompkins from Sitka had 1,256 votes. I don't know what you can read from that. These two candidates are very different. Thomas has been in politics for a long time. He's very well known. He's got broad roots. He's Alaska Native, a fisherman. And, you know, I think he's also seen as both a seasoned politician and as a man of the people. Jonathan Christ Tompkins is much younger. He grew up in Sitka. He comes from a more you know, educated background where he has less life experience, more education. He's certainly more liberal. Of course, he's running as a Democrat. So the demographics of the district, Sitka being bigger, would favor Christ Tompkins, the newcomer. But it's a high hurdle to topple Bill Thomas.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, Rebecca,
sure.
For on that subject. Paul, turnout in the state election was dismal, the primary election, somewhere around, probably not going to make 25%.
No, it probably won't.
Why?
It's primary election. There were no real barn burners on the ballot. I think people are still fishing. People are still getting ready to go to school. I don't think they're paying attention to politics. The November election will be entirely different, I think. But this one
will be a
presidential election. It'll be something to bring people out. Unless you were interested in ballot measure two or specific races, you know, in Anchorage or wherever, I don't know why you would have a reason to go. They probably stayed home because they weren't inspired.
Rebecca, your perspective on turnout.
It's funny because my 10-year-old daughter said to me when she saw my I Have Voted sticker, she said, why bother? There are so many people. Does your vote really count? And of course, I thought, I haven't educated her properly. But I think a lot of people do feel that way. And the primaries can sneak up on you. There they are in the summer, and I would agree there just isn't a lot to bring most people out. A couple of ballot measures that most people either don't know or don't care very much about. I have to say, too, I received a new, well, I think there might be some people on the voter rolls who need to be purged, and sometimes turnout looks lower than it actually is. That's one factor.
Okay, let's leave it there and go to Mike Bradner briefly as we wrap up Alaska Edition. Mike, turnout.
Abysmally low. It's also that year that's one in maybe 12 when you don't end up with a U.S. senator or something else on the district. And like, nothing, there's no barn burner. And by the way, if the sun's out, it's late in the year, Alaskans are going to go fishing or somewhere else and not go vote. And I think it was expected to be a low turnout, and it was. And that brings out, of course, the super voters only. But it's, and I think Becca's right that really we need to adjust these voter turnout figures. I don't know whether demographers can estimate that the people who are no longer here, but you have to keep them on the rolls, it's probably far much better than that.
Okay, we do know there was a congressional election or nominations and that Don Young was renominated. Sharon Cisna was nominated by the Democrats. We just didn't have time to get to it. We'll get to it next week. Thanks for joining us on Alaska Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.